Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back after a stonking weekend. Rugby is back after a two-week break. I'll tell you what, we needed it. We've got lots and lots to talk about. On the first of two podcasts that are coming in your feed this week, so that's why you just need to hit subscribe right now, wherever you get your podcast, be it Acast, Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever else. And yeah, we'll have a Six Nations preview podcast, this one though. It's just looking at the rugby week and the weekend just gone. I'm Tim. That is JB.
Hello, Tim.
Well, he is JB.
I am. And he, him.
And down the line is Phil.
Hello. Hello, Tim. Hello, JB.
Phil, can I just say that is a lovely Kangol hat you're wearing. What happened, Tim?
Do you like the way I've got it backwards as
yeah,
well,
Yeah, back
Tim?
To front. I like that a lot.
What happened this week, Tim? Because you're on the inside. I get you... I guess you've got a BT Sport WhatsApp group or something.
Well, just, you know, some lead, some follow. Lol, bringing back the 90s. Why not?
It was not so much the backwards hat, but it's the way he married it with the jeans.
I think the whole look was great, personally.
I saw Lawrence today in the BT... Not me, I wasn't there, but I saw him in the BT Sport studio and I thought, that's a man that's been working out again. And he was excellent.
I think he's been doing a lot of cycling and stuff again.
He looks like a man who can wear a backwards hat and I wouldn't say a thing to, unless I was on a podcast a long way away from him.
Agreed.
He's looking good. He's
looking great.
Chiseled.
Will he be wearing a backwards Kangol hat in the future, Tim?
Yeah, 100%. I love it. I think it's great. I think it's a solid look.
Are you doing this in solidarity now?
Can I just say I need to explain what's going on here. This is why I need rugby. I'm slightly distracted at the minute. This is why I've needed rugby back so long. What happens when you don't have rugby for 2 weeks is I start using words and I start getting interested in things I've never been interested in before in my life. And I have said today more times than in my entire life combined, cryptocurrencies, market manipulation... trading. I don't know what's happened, guys. I don't know what's happened.
He brought his laptop with him. I thought, oh, this is it's a bit prepared for Tim. I mean, usually he has a video on his phone or something and connects it. Whips it open. I was fully expecting him to have another sea shanty on there or something.
Yeah.
he's acting like Wolf of Wall Street.
I was going to say this sea shanties addiction was a lot less harmful in the long term than the potential cryptocurrency and trading addiction.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's there in his backwards Kangol hat. He's like one of those cool guys in Joe in films, and he comes on a skateboard and he trades with his little laptop and he always needs an internet connection. It's worrying times, actually. Very worrying.
It is. Anyway, I don't even know what it is, but I just purchased some...
He knows exactly what it is. He's lying to you.
I don't know what PNT is, but I've just purchased that cryptocurrency. I've just traded for some of that, and it's flying at the minute. It's going to the moon.
Tim, I've got a cryptocurrency tip for you. Now, the Venezuelan government, obviously they are very upstanding, process-driven government.
Of course.
They're the kind of people you trust. They released, was it the Petras?
There was a Petras, yes.
About 18 months ago, to basically bankroll themselves and continue their mass money printing and hyperinflation. So get on the Petras.
Yeah, the Petras sounds like a great buy, Tim.
Yeah, thanks, mate. I appreciate that. That's really kind of you to tip me off on that. No, everyone, like words like Dogecoin, for example. That's a thing, apparently, it turns out.
Scrumcoin. Why don't we launch our own?
Yeah, Scrumcoin. I'm in for it. I like it. Yeah, mad times. And this is, again, this is all purely because there was no rugby.
Well, I've got back into kettlebell swings. I've completed 2,500 this week. I'm going to do 2,500 for the next 3 weeks. So 10,000 in 4 weeks is what I'm hoping to hit. Interspersed with pull-ups.
Wonderful.
Nice.
Yeah, that's what lockdown makes you do. And what are you doing, Phil?
Not a lot at the moment. waiting for a baby to arrive, so I'm kind of on full lockdown, barely leaving the house at the moment, which is very depressing. But
so it sounds kind of mostly like what you normally do.
Yeah, no change to normal then.
Yeah. Anyone watch any rugby?
Yes,
I did. Yeah, we got so sorry. I can't take my eye off this screen. It's flying. It's absolutely flying at the minute. Anyway, yes, we've got Paul Gustard's parting shot with Quince to talk about. We've got Premiership Rugby and Pro 14 Rugby to talk about. We have got some Championship Rugby potential and possible relegation ramifications. I suppose one story just to mention briefly is the fact that Rugby Australia have thrown their hat in the ring for entertaining the Lions Tour. Just very briefly, let's cover this one off. What would you make to that?
Well, look, there's a lot of people out there who are very worried about the Lions Tour. I know that you're worried about it, Tim, actually, and rightly so, because people have got emotional attachments to the Lions and what it means and all the rest of it. But these are unusual times, and I certainly welcome Australia's intervention to this. I think it's in the right spirit of the rugby family, for want of a better phrase. And if they can pull it off, and if everyone can play, the players get their chance to be Lions. South Africa get their money, which is very important, and their players get the chance to play against the Lions. And I think it's a welcome intervention.
I think it's in the right spirit, as JB said. I just don't think it'll work logistically. Unless the two-week quarantine gets thrown out the window, which it will not do. Not for players and certainly not for travelling fans. So I just can't see it being a viable solution.
Well, interestingly, I think it might be, you know, because the teams are... I mean, I'm sure that either teams can get exemptions, although the tennis players didn't get exemptions, did they? Neither did the Argentines.
Yeah, and the tennis players, Novak Djokovic was throwing his toys out of the pram from some of the headlines I read. I don't follow tennis at all, but I know he's getting some criticism for fighting the quarantine, and it wasn't eased up for him at all.
Well, if Novak Djokovic can't get around it.
Exactly. Well, so, look,
I don't think the 2 weeks is a massive stumbling block. At this point, we don't know if those 2 weeks will still be in place come the Lions Tour, but I think that is potentially overcomeable. The point about Australia is there's a lot of South African expats there who could potentially go to a lot of games. And, you know, if Australia were playing South Africa in a stadium local to me, I might go and watch that. So it might not be nearly as bad as we think. It's certainly not as bad as having it in the UK, because you get the touring element. It solves a lot of problems with sponsors and not having to undo sponsorship deals. I think it's a fairly good plan. It's probably the least worst plan.
Okay, fine. I don't know. I'm just going to say no. So there you go. That's my summary. No.
Would you just prefer to cancel it, Tim?
If it's not a tour and it's not in South Africa,
If it's not a South African tour is what you're saying?
If it's not a tour and it's not in South Africa, I'm barely interested.
Okay, so if it is a tour but not in South Africa?
It won't be a tour.
Oh, okay, so what if it is in South Africa but it's not a tour? I.e. just the three games.
Better. But still not a Lions tour.
Yeah, my thought is we should cancel it. I mean, that's my also. It's a horrible thing for the players. Horrible, well, particularly for South African players. They only get once every 12 years to do this thing. Providing South Africa can be paid for, i.e., there's some insurances. Sounds to me as if the best option in this instance is to cancel it, and it doesn't give me any joy to say that. But I'm kind of with Tim, which is it's either going ahead or it's not going ahead. No half measures. I'd rather cancel it. But Australia is the least worst alternative.
Postpone 2022.
Can't be done, mate. Not going to be done. Can't be done.
Of course it can be done.
Near enough. No, it can't be done. It's calendars which will kill you. Calendars and sponsorships. Sponsorships in the short term. Calendars.
You can get round. So postpone it to 2022. Sponsorships is not an issue. Calendars can be worked out.
Which calendar slot do you want?
The same one.
Okay. So if you go in the same one, you have to cancel, was it, 5 different tours. So 10 teams need to change.
Fine.
Done.
Actually, no, you don't, because you still run those tours, because you just do it with an A team. Or it's not even an A team, it's a 60% first team. So you don't have to change any tours.
Yeah, so South Africa obviously will have to change their tour. England can potentially tour, I guess, but with a much depleted squad.
England will be missing 8 to 10 players.
Yeah, I'm not sure that every other country in the world is going to sign off on that, because that's what you're going to need. It needs to be signed off by World Rugby, and I can't see that happening.
That is the best option. That's definitely the best option.
It's the best theoretical option. It's not the best practical option.
It's the best option.
Let's just jump across then. So we've all sort of made our thoughts clear on that then. On the Paul Gustard parting shot versus Danny Kerr and others. It was very interesting piecing together the different players and what they had to say on this.
Yeah, I mean, it is clearly one of the worst appointments ever, the Paul Gustard one, in terms of Premiership. Maybe an appointment worse than this was when Leicester Tigers appointed the Argentine coach to be their head coach for all of 6 months. Or Matt O'Connor Mark II was pretty bad.
Yeah, Matt O'Connor Mark II is the one that jumps to my mind.
Yeah.
London Irish, Tom, what's his face?
Tom Coventry.
Yeah, God.
Well, I mean, tough. Lovely bloke, and he was a great coach, but he just came up and didn't respect the way English rugby was and just said, right, we're going to play Super Rugby, and...
Bye-bye. So, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way to Gustard. I just think the culture, the meshing of the coach and the players was wrong. The higher-ups clearly misjudged the whole situation. And maybe that displayed itself today, which we can talk about later, with that Quinn's performance.
Yeah.
I do get what you're saying. And we'll talk about this in relation to Bath as well. I think Bath-Bristol's where we should begin, actually, in a second. But in fact, let me just draw the parallel with Paul Gustard and Stuart Hooper. Well, no, actually, no, I'll just... Sorry. I'll finish a sentence at some point. Yeah. So on the Quinns thing, I think you do get the sense that whilst all may not have been rosy, and there may well have been some elements of what Paul Gustard was trying to do that clearly didn't connect with people, I don't like the idea that player power might be flexing much, much more than it ever has in rugby.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe inevitable, but doesn't mean it's great.
I definitely feel where you're coming from there. Let's just think about being a player a second. Now, I have had a coach who turns out to be the best coach I've ever had by a country mile. But one of the things I had to adjust to fairly early doors, and which I hated, and he did basically with brute force, is the sheer amount of RFU nonsense which was spouted about trusting and good people. And you've just got to swallow it. Now, I'm fairly malleable compared to international rugby players, and I could swallow it. But in his parting shot on the way to Benetton, he mentioned dynamic vision. I mean, what is that? Is that contact lenses? Is that, you know, is that seeing the dark? What is dynamic vision? It's about as bad as Stuart Hooper's globally important. And I just hate this nonsense. What was the other thing? He said dynamic vision and something else. I just think I can... Imagine coming to work every day and having to listen to that nonsense.
I've got the statement in front of me, which I think I'm not going to read the full LinkedIn post, but there's one paragraph which was, I read it as a parting shot directly at Quinns. And the statement was, I wanted to join a team where there was a clear vision, deep level of trust and dynamic environment, which was driven towards performance, which by implication means that Quinns did not have those three things.
Sorry, dynamic environment, not dynamic vision.
Yeah, clear vision, deep level of trust, and dynamic environment, which was driven towards performance.
I mean,
so he's saying that Quinns do not have those things.
But he was in charge. It was his job. He was the director of rugby.
I do appreciate that, but this is kind of my point, and we'll come on to this with Stuart Hooper, is there is a lot more levers in play here, and there are a lot more moving parts. It isn't just, and let's never let rugby get to the point where a team has a couple of bad games and people start going, sack the manager.
It depends what the manager's done, Tim.
Yeah, but there's... So, I know this, and I'm sure my brother wouldn't mind me saying so, but when my brother went to Sale Sharks, he would just say... Well, there are some clubs at certain times you can have serious cliques in the squad, which make it almost impossible for a new person coming in.
Really interesting point you make, which is Sale Sharks. When you said that to me, whenever it was you said it to
when we had a phone conversation on Friday night.
Yes, right. Yes, when you said that, it immediately rang bells, which is the Sale Sharks crew for 10 years were exactly the same as Harlequins. Guys that have won the championship just think they're champions forever without ever having to back it up. And I can completely see that. I mean, the parallels between those two clubs, both declining teams over the best part of, 5 years after they won it. I don't know when last time. When did Quins win it? 10 years ago now?
2012.
So, yeah. I mean, I can completely see that. But I also, I just can't get over people using words like, I mean, is a rugby dungeon a dynamic environment? Are we performance driven here? What does it even mean?
So dynamic environment, it's a bit of a nonsense bullshit phrase, isn't it? But driven towards performance is, I don't mind that phrase. And it's clear, or it's certainly clear the way that I've read this, I'm interpreting this, that is a shot that he is saying that there are individuals within that camp who were not working their hardest to get the maximum performance out of that team.
Of which I tend to agree with him, actually.
So yeah, and that does ring a little bit true. And it's interesting because he's not the only person who left Quins this week. And Chris Ashton didn't post any LinkedIn posts, but... I watched an interview with him when he signed for Worcester this week, which we can come on to in a little bit, because that was some interesting pod-related news on that. But he was saying he was quite candid that the fit between him and Harlequins wasn't right. And he didn't go into the reasons why it wasn't right, but he said it wasn't right. He's quite clear on that. And I can just see there is something... a little bit amiss at Harlequins I do think it is personalities in there, but credit to them, they put in an amazing performance this week, but it's they've got the talent there, but have they got the personalities to back that up? Because they've put in good performances every now and again over the last few years, but they very rarely back them up with meaningful season-long performances.
Yeah.
Well, let's hold the thoughts on Harlequins Wasps, because I want to talk about that, but we'll come back to it. Bristol Bath.
Well, Bristol first. How awesome are they? And I love the fact that Pat Lam after the game went, yeah, we did all right for the first half.
I agree with him. I do not think that this is the game that Bristol fans should hang their hat on and say, yeah, we are going to be champions. I think they are definitely a championship-worthy team. I think they'll be challenging for it, and I think they could win it. But this is not the performance. I felt there were a lot of mistakes in it. There was a lot of good stuff. There was a lot of mistakes. To me, the story is Bath and how abysmal Bath are.
So Bath are... This game, from a Bath perspective, is... I mean, where do you start?
I can't even begin to start with Bath. They're incredible. Unbelievable.
But let's go just before we start on Bath. Let's talk a little bit, because I don't think your 30 seconds there, JB, has really done justice to the Bristol performance.
No,
because yes, there were a few mistakes, and
it was outrageously good.
I think they could beat Bath by 100 points.
Yes, they switched off a little bit in the second half, but who can blame him? Because the game was done and dusted after 32. The game was done and dusted after 10 minutes.
Right.
The game was got a bonus point after 32 minutes. They could focus on next week, not get any injuries. Bristol, at their best in this game, were totally, totally unplayable. They were sensational. And it's not... They're not a team where there is one threat where you're worried about Radranda, or you're worried about Piatow, or you're worried about Nathan Hughes, or you're worried about Morahan, or you're worried about Andy Uhren, who is incredible, or Byrne, the hooker, who was incredible. Like, the whole team was just threats everywhere, left, right, and centre.
They were
superb.
They were very good. I imagine Pat Lam is looking at this game and is actually disappointed they didn't score more. I bet he is looking at the things like that first try by Monaghan. Yeah, fine, good try. Why is he not running on to that pace? You know, why are there so...
What are you doing? What are you saying?
Are you telling me that Pat Lam isn't going to want to improve further?
No, but geez, no, what are you saying?
What I'm saying is when they scored, you're looking at Bath at like sixes and sevens. Bath were so bad.
Luke Morahan, you only stood...
No, you're missing my point, Tim. My point is that Bristol won this at a canter. And that Pat Lam is absolutely right. Like they could have beaten Bath by 100 points. It could have been like a level 8 mismatch. That's how out of shape Bath are.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with that point, but I think you're focusing too much on the negatives. And I think that Pat Lam will look at things. There, it was not a perfect performance, but it was a very, very good performance. I would be keen to get both of your take actually on the second coming, Johan Lloyd.
I've been raving about him for weeks, mate. Where have you been?
Oh no! I'm a big fan of Johan Lloyd. I'd not seen him play 10 before, other than like 10 minutes at the end of a game.
I think go back to the podcast. I think 2 weeks ago I said Wales is 10. They haven't got a concern about their future at 10. He is the future at 10.
Now he's been capped, right?
He has been capped. Yeah,
right. He has. Yeah,
on the wing.
This is going to wind me up no end now. He's been capped, which means that Wales think that they own his labour for the rest of time now, and that he has to play in Newport. I don't know how he fits into the Welsh pay structure, because he's got one cap and he's a teenager, or maybe he's 20 now. So presumably he'd be paid a lot less than, say, George North is, although he's definitely more important to Wales' future than George North. I think if I'm Johan Lloyd, I test the system and say, no, I'm going to stay in Bristol because this is an incredible team that I'm in. If he plays... I mean, well, he played bloody well on Friday, but if he carries on improving week on week on week... He's probably the closest thing in the league to Marcus Smith, which is an accolade in of itself. Test that Welsh system. See if you can either get them to part with even more money for your services rather than some stupid banded pay where they deem your market value to be X, Y, Z. And why leave? You're going to be challenging for European Cups, whereas in the Welsh system, what would you be challenging for? You know, three games a year in the Pro 14 at full strength, coming, you know, being knocked out of the group stages, and a few run-outs with Wales. Not worth it.
I tend to agree on the staying at a path, staying in the Premiership. I want to see more of him at 10. Because we've seen him play 15 on the wing, we've seen him come off the bench, and we've seen him be a really dangerous steppy runner. Great turn of pace, really good feet. And working the outside channels beautifully in the past. In this game, he didn't have a great deal in front of it. He didn't have a great deal of defence in front of him at times. The Bath backline defence was all over the place. But he nicely picked gaps in it with world-class talent outside him. So he played well. But I really want to see more of him at 10.
I'm just trying to contain my anger now. I'm just having a think about this. You know, he's a 19-year-old kid, right? And he's looking up and he's seeing what? Ben Spencer, best 9 in England, allegedly. Well, you know, his England chances have evaporated before his eyes. There's no way he deserves to go to England playing in the Bath team. There's 60-cap Priestland, who he looked like he didn't even do up his laces. And there's Matavesi, who had a game a career game to forget. And this kid's 19. I mean, it's not a hard equation, is it? You run at the kid that's 19, particularly Josh, is it Josh or Joel? Which one is it?
Josh
Matavesi. He's a big old boy. Just put him under pressure continually. The fact they got not so much as a hand on him is a disgrace. It's an utter disgrace.
Yeah, and this is a little bit where, just coming on to Stuart Hooper, who is now under all kinds of pressure, and he's where a lot of the focus is. And just as with Paul Gustel and Quinns, there may well be a case to answer there in the case of Stuart Hooper, just as with Paul Gustard. However, you cannot blame the majority of what happened on Friday night for Bath. just as with some of those Quinn's performances this season, you cannot blame the coach when players do the most basic things wrong. And I feel sorry for coaches on those occasions because some of those Bath players did not do justice to that shirt that they're wearing. And you don't blame Stuart Hooper for that. That is personal pride. Well, no, but that's just letting players off the hook. These are professional players who, as you say, in the case of some of those defensive efforts, effort was the word. Like if it was a technical element or an organisational thing, you might go, oh dear, who's taking care of that? But I'm sorry, and you can even go, who's the Bath defence coach? What are they doing? Actually, some of that was just no effort.
Hang on a minute. By the way, you are 100% correct. There is no effort, and it does show that you can't just buy good players and expect them to be good, and just by the fact that you pay them, you expect them to run out there and be ace, because everyone pays their players. That's not a unique feature. I'm just going to float this theory. I've just thought of it this second about Hooper and Gustard combined. Do you think it's insincere? Like, when you listen to them, you think you're listening to a man reading a textbook. And that's a hard thing to follow. When you listen to Lamb or Baxter or Diamond or Sanderson or any of these guys, even if they're wrong, they're sincere. Even if it's not from a textbook, it's sincere. If someone tells me it's not globally important, I think, who are you trying to kid? Like,
yeah, I actually agree with that point. And the globally important one is the one that stands out for Hooper. And the Gustard one is when someone asked him about Sinclair, when there was rumours that Sinclair was going over to Bristol. And he asked him.
Well, yeah.
Was it you on this?
Remember, it was a great question. Yeah.
Where he said, "Well, let me stop you there. First and foremost, he's a wonderful, incredible human being." And you're like, what? That's just irrelevant. Like, and the insincerity that gives you, it's like a lack of sincerity or a lack of
something there.
Wanting to engage with the question or wanting to engage with the problem that's in front of you.
Yeah, you want these guys. I want everyone to be successful. Yeah, I don't have any animus towards either of them, but I just think that they are kind of robotic. This is how you say. This is how you behave like a director of rugby. And I think the players need, even the top ones need a little bit more from their DOR. Just to connect a bit. I know that sounds like that sounds like something which Stuart Hooper would say. We just need to connect. But you do. You need something about you.
Just on the counter of that, and I'm just thinking about it now, is Eddie Jones at times will give a totally insincere answer to a question. He'll just be doing it for the theatre.
Yeah.
He'll give a disingenuous answer, but I always get more from Eddie Jones. He's playing four-dimensional chess, whereas these guys are just reading from a management textbook. With Eddie Jones, it's always there's a bigger thing at play.
But isn't the Eddie Jones sincerity the fact that he's a game player?
Yeah, yes.
It's like Donald Trump. Everyone says, we like him because he's sincere. You know, he's a liar. He goes, yeah, but that's part of him. That's why he's sincere. we like genuine people. We think the people with the unmovable hair. Well, he has unmovable hair and the white teeth. They're the liars. Like, there's something about sincerity, and I don't know quite what it is.
I do like the sincerity of always being a liar. You're true to yourself because you always lie.
Yeah. So, Steve Diamond is definitely not the a textbook reading coach. But you know when you're around him, he means what he says and you're getting to know an individual. Whether he hates you or likes you or whatnot, you just know.
Yeah. I'm not saying I agree pretty much with what you said. I'm just saying there is some balance here, and let's not get to a stage, as with football, where the easy answer is, blame the manager, get them out, change. Because we've seen this with so many clubs. The coach changes, nothing changes. Mm. And actually, Quinn's is a good example of that. John Kingston was a great bloke.
Yeah.
And there was something a little bit rotten. There was something not quite right. There was something, and again, it took... there was some good coaches that came and went at Sale Sharks before they started to do better. And you can put that down to cliques and a really pretty, not a very good culture, which actually got, and it was when that got cleaned house that things got better. Don't overlook that. And we've talked about Bath a bunch of times, and, you know, it looked like it was getting better under Todd Blackadder and then tailed off. It looked like it was getting better under Stuart Hooper and then tailed off.
I heard stuff about Todd Blackadder which just blows my mind. Like, things... he didn't know who Ben Youngs is. Like, it was real... Like, he knows...
But he watched every game that Bath have played for the last three seasons on DVD. Man... Don't you remember? That's what they said when he came over.
There's no way that man watched any rugby. He didn't know who he was playing against. Like, for the last season he was there, Stuart Hooper was in charge. I feel sorry for Stuart Hooper.
I do.
And, like, he's been put in this position because, by all accounts, he's an outstanding man. And he's taken this role as DOR, so he's put his neck on the line. Because he could have had a really cushy job at Bath as something else, and no one had ever questioned him. And like, oh, what does Hoops do? Oh, he picks up a couple of hundred grand a year, or, you know, whatever it is, and is a generic director or something. He's put his hand up for DOR, and I think it's going to cost him his career at Bath, unless they bump up support.
He will not leave the organisation, is my prediction. Whatever happens, even if he's not director of rugby, he will not leave.
Yeah, they love him. I mean, they love him so much, they love Charlie Yules, because Charlie Yules' main selling point is that he reminds them of Stuart Hooper. That's why he's there. He's just like the next Stuart Hooper. That's why he exists in Bath. So I agree with you, Tim.
Just on Blackadder, because Blackadder, I mean, everyone raved about him when he came over, but he never won anything with Crusaders as a coach. He had 7 years with the peak of Dan Carter and Richie McCaw's career. They won umpteen titles before him. I think they've won 3 out of 4 after him, but there was this barren 7-year period.
What happened
there?
What happened those 7 years?
God knows. Because he had the best talent in the world for 7 years and couldn't win Super Rugby with them.
And what did
that was during the decline of South Africa as well. Like that was during the... It was in the run-up to the 2015 South African years. That was not when South Africa rugby was the powerhouse that it is now, or the powerhouse that it was in, say, 2007, 2009. It was the barren South African years.
And what did Bath think? Like, we've got some of the best talent in the world too. I wonder if we could get someone to win nothing for 7 years. Perfect. What a great fit. Now, that's it. He's an interesting one because everybody says he is one of the nicest individuals in rugby. Top bloke.
He came across brilliantly. He came across so, but he came across like a slightly too nice teacher.
Yeah,
just rather than someone who was going to win things.
Yeah, but
which is incredible because he captained the All Blacks, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah, yeah.
Remarkable.
Let's just think of some fine people and the pain that this has caused. Because I lived in Bath and worked in Bristol.
Ooh,
and when this game happened back in the day, it was huge. I went to a few games at the Rec when I was at uni with some. I remember Joe Alab. I was at uni with, and he played in the Bath Bristol derby for Bristol, and they won at the Rec in a really horrible like December day. And it was the atmosphere was like there was such angst between the teams. So firstly, it was great, but also I was like this. There were times in the second half where I was like, I just want a crowd, because it would have been absolutely bouncing.
Yeah.
But we've got loads of listeners like Ed Scott, who came with us to Romania. And to Madrid.
Yeah.
And he said,
poor Ed.
He said, please, you'll have to tell me when in the podcast you're talking about Bath, because I'm not sure I can take it. And even he watched the game with his son, who went to bed in tears. So chin up, Ed.
Stay neutral. It's so much easier.
But this would hurt big time. And if there ever was one result that could shake up the snow globe for Tarquin and Bruce Craig to make some changes at Bath, it would be a 48-3 absolute humiliation by their arch rivals.
I wonder if Tarquin's the one on the block, because Stuart Hooper's going to stay. He needs a job. Tarquin can go. Hooper gets bumped up.
Maybe.
I have no idea. But something's got to change. It's not that, or they just get rid of all the players. Like, there's no relegation. What are we paying you for? Genuinely, what? I'll tell you the one which got me. Our second rows went off. Yeah, we didn't have any power. okay, that is fine. Your second rows did go off, and you know that does account for
that affects your line out a lot.
It account well
and restarts.
It accounts for something, doesn't it? I mean, whether it's 40 plus points.
No, of course.
And also, they didn't really have an adequate replacement. Who came off the bench? Oh, Toby Faletau.
Yeah.
Right. So don't give me the no power when Toby Faletau's coming off your bench.
No, they're not. They're not line out experts though. You can take Faletau that point.
Faletau can get up in a line.
Well. Those are reasonable points, but they're no excuse for an absolutely abject performance. I actually thought that the thrust of Stuart Hooper's point, if you sort of read between the lines a little bit, was the players need to have a look in the mirror. I don't think he was deflecting. I think it's a fair comment. And if I was one of those Bath players, I would be looking at myself and going, there's 150 years of history in that badge.
Yeah.
And whatever's going on off the pitch, whoever your coach is, there are certain standards you don't drop to if you're a professional athlete and pulling on a jersey like that. If you drop to a certain level, you're disrespecting all the people that have worn the jersey before.
There are some teams out there, and I just wonder if the players do not realise how lucky they are to play for them. Bath must be, just in terms of brands and badges and history, it's got to be one of the top. It's definitely in the top 10 in the world, if not in top 5 of the world. I mean, you'd want on your CV, had a season at Bath. Same for Tigers, had a season at Tigers. Now, Tigers are in a different situation because they've got kids coming through and, you know, they're in a different situation. Bath have got a fully functioning international star-studded lineup, and I do not think they are grateful or even aware of what the badge means.
Well, I mean, there are some parallels to draw. Bath have a lot of established internationals who are, at least if you were drawing their career as a bell curve, they're over the peak. And just as Quinn's had a lot of England internationals, bell curve over the peak, just as that Sale team from back in about 2010, bell curve players
over the peak.
Big contracts. Maybe there's something to be said for that profile of a squad. And that's why...
I'm just trying to think, who's in... I mean, yeah, there are guys on the tipping point because, you know, I said Faletau's a great player. Well, he hasn't been great for Bath, has he? But then you've got the younger lads coming through, like Yules is going to be... I don't think he is. But, you know, Yules is going to be an up-and-comer. Abano's an up-and-comer. Spencer...
Zach Mercer.
Peacetime number 8, as he was described to us on our WhatsApp group, which I think is a great way to describe him. Yeah,
they've got like Cam Redpath and Tom de Glanville are very talented, very young guys.
Yeah, and there should be a moratorium on any Bath player playing international rugby until they sort this out. And therefore, they won't be international rugby players and they might want to play better.
They've got to solve something. And this to me looked like a team who have basically given up. And Tim, I really get your point. I hate the fact that player power can effectively decide whether a coach loses or keeps his job. But I think that's the situation that Bath are in.
Do you know?
And I think Hoops will go. But it wouldn't surprise me if he stepped down or stepped up from director of rugby to another position within the organisation.
Do you know the story of Carson Wentz?
Quarterback went as a first round pick.
Yeah. So Carson Wentz is
Denver Broncos?
No, Philly.
Oh yes, of course. Yeah.
So Carson Wentz is a quarterback in the NFL and he's on a enormous contract. In fact, he's on so much money that if they got rid of him, I think, you know, it would be a cap hit of $32 million. It's quid dollars. So effectively they're stuck with this quarterback and they've invested so much of their future into the quarterback. They're in a bit of a conundrum as to what they're going to do. And one of the thoughts was, well, he might be able to play in Indianapolis. He likes the coaches or whatnot. So they, you know, from what I understand, they were exploring a trade. They've got so much tied up in this guy that the heads of the organisation decided it was better to fire all of the coaches that they have at the Eagles, including Doug Peterson, who won them a Super Bowl, first one in ever, I think. And go and hire the Colts offensive coordinator. Instead of sending him to the Colts, they brought the Colts to him. And I wonder if that's the situation that you're trying to avoid, Tim.
Well, is that similar to the Danny Cipriani, George Skivington?
You're not far wrong there, mate.
Don Waldock situation. And look how that went.
Yeah, not great. Not great. he's making noises about coming back to play, isn't he? Is he making noises or are agents making noises?
There's a rumour about him going to Newcastle.
That's madness. Yeah.
I heard the Newcastle rumour. It just does not feel like a good fit.
No, especially if the rumoured no relegation is a thing.
Yeah, you're right.
It's a terrible fit if there's no relegation. It's a bad fit anyway because Newcastle have built this team around no star players. They've got a little bit of stardust, but only guys like
Joel Hodgson,
Radwan, who they've brought in,
and Mark Wilson,
and Mark Wilson, who's Newcastle through and through.
Yeah,
And I was actually I did watch the first half of Newcastle London Irish today, and the opposing styles around compiling a pack were incredibly stark. I mean, that Newcastle pack is very good, very well drilled, very hard working, but pretty much they're all nobodies. They've been put together and have been drilled to be a very good pack. That London Irish pack is 6/8 of a World Rugby Pack of the Year from about 2014. Yeah. There are hundreds of Australian caps in there. There's hundreds of international caps in there. There are big names left, right and centre. A genuine World Rugby Team of the Year in 2014, 2015 would have included Augustine Creevy, Sakopi Kepu, Steve Maffey, Rob Simmons, Sean O'Brien.
You're not wrong at all.
But it felt like... In that game this weekend, and I won't go into this game in huge detail, but
no, do.
But that Newcastle pack will be good for 16, 18 games this season. They will put in a really good show. That London Irish pack will put in a really good show for 6 to 8 games this season. But this happened to be one of them. They put in a really good performance and won this game and prevented Newcastle from getting a bonus point.
If you listened at the end of the last podcast and you followed my predictions and put any dollar on it, you can thank me whenever we're next in a pub. I called the Irish win.
Do you think Irish will finish ahead?
Well, that's just because I also called several Irish defeats wrongly. So, you know, I'll take the one.
Yeah, good call, because I thought exactly as I've just explained it. I thought the kind of no name hard working pack would grind out a win against the big name but showboaty pack. But no, that London Irish pack performed, and it was really impressive to see. They got a penalty in the first 20 minutes, a kickable penalty, could have gone for 3. They backed themselves, kicked to the corner, and scored it. Creevy from a driving maul went over, and you thought that it's going to be their day when they did that. Fair play, Irish.
Fair play indeed. Fair play indeed.
Played 7-1-2. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, with this in mind, let's just talk about the relegation thing. A lot more said in the rugby paper today, and a lot more has been written about it. Still no confirmation.
Jokes.
Still nothing official from any official source. Premiership Rugby haven't said anything. No club has said anything outright. So this is still something that hasn't been announced. Then the last we heard was that one team's going to be allowed back up, and Ealing, if Saracens got the automatic spot, it would be 13, and Ealing could purchase their spot in the Premiership for £20 million.
Right, so here are my thoughts on just that small section of what's going on. This is really worrying. I've seen this before, and anyone who follows... This is my second American football anecdote of the evening. Anyone ever followed the USFL back in the day? Not that I did, because I might not have even been born, or if I was about 1 or 2. What happened is they created a football league to compete with the NFL, and they found themselves in a situation where they couldn't afford really to be in existence. So what they did is they looked around to other rich men and said, look, you can join our league if you pay us to buy the franchise. And this is exactly what Premier Rugby are doing. They're selling more of themselves in order to basically be sustainable. Cash in the Premiership now is going to be so hard to come by because CBC have got to take their third come what may. So we've got the same TV deal as we did, you know, for the last 3 or 4 years, But with CVC taking a third of it, which nobody is talking about, nobody has said a thing about any of this, except for Owen Slot. In fairness, none of the other journalists are talking about the reduction of cash coming into Premiership. So they're going to have to rely on the owners. The owners have done something rather sensible, which said, OK, we will therefore sell an extra space or some more shares to you, Ealing, if you want to come up at 20 million, because this will keep us sustainable for a little while longer. But then you project that outwards. Is a 14-team league more valuable than a 12-team league? Or are you just putting more stress on your assets, which are your players?
So, just playing devil's advocate here, and I'll say what my opinion is in a minute. The Premiership rugby clubs would argue that if you were to come up into a 14-team ring-fence league, you are benefiting immediately from all of the effort and money that the 13 of us have spent over the last 20 years, let's say. So that I think that's where they're putting their valuation and saying you don't just get it for free. You can buy in. It's like paying to sit and play a game of cards in a casino. There's an entry fee and you've got to pay it. So I understand that perspective. The flip side of this is, and this ties in with the Championship and what is not happening with the Championship, is it's just the fact that the RFU and therefore Premiership Rugby, by extension, have absolutely hammered the Championship. They have just crushed it and squeezed out any hope of another Bristol or Exeter or one of these teams coming.
Ealing.
Or Ealing. They are strangling it. It's like a boa constrictor. Death by a thousand cuts. Any other analogies you want to use. What the RFU are not doing with the Championship is outrageous now. Yeah. They are funding. And hey, listen, I'm a supporter of women's rugby, but they are... Oh, no, it's not a zero-sum game. It shouldn't be one or the other. You should just spread it out. But yeah, they are the RFU is prioritising where its money is, and it is just casting the Championship aside.
And just to add to that, if I'm Ealing or the Championship team who's looking to get squeezed out, I'd be saying, look, the reason your bloody league is so valuable is not because you're business geniuses, although some of you might be, some of the owners certainly might be. It's because, unlike all these other leagues, there is a genuine threat that at the end of the year, one of your teams will come down to us, and we will let your shareholders play in our league.
You've just completed the circle that I actually forgot and got off track. But you've just completely completed the circle. My point was, the Premiership have a duty to recognise, rather than just going, you pay 20 million to come up here, is to go, any value we have is as a result of a whole pyramid of merit-based rugby, which has gone on for many, many years.
Yeah. Now, I have no problem if you want to take the Premiership and make it into a ring-fence league, providing you show me what the mechanisms are to keep it competitive throughout. So we don't just have a top six battling out. Luckily, I've solved that, but we'll talk about it again.
We'll let Phil come in, but I just say it's a little bit like I can deal with the concept of a lockdown, but I want to know what the criteria are for coming out of it. And that's the bit that's frustrating me at the moment. I'm finding it really hard at the minute dealing with this lockdown because there is no measure. There is no target measure criteria out. And so therefore it's just really confusing. It's exactly the same thing. It just needs to be all spelt out. And the fact that there is no official word coming from any direction, just rumour or conjecture, just makes me look like a potential stitch-up is on.
Oh, I think there is. In fact, I know there is, but I've heard, basically, relegation is done.
And the Championship will not be happening, certainly not in its normal format, anytime soon.
Yeah,
which is a big problem.
So
six of the clubs have said we couldn't afford to. Because the RFU funding's been dropped.
Yeah.
And clubs, like, for example, these clubs that would be expected to pay £120,000 for COVID testing at the same time when the RFU said, no, we haven't got any money for you.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big believer that maybe professional rugby should not exist outside of the Premiership. I'm not entirely sure that spending what little money you have on basically busing players up and down the country to play nearly professional rugby, sometimes against amateurs, sometimes against semi-pros, sometimes against, you know, fully professional outfits, is a particularly good use of RFU money, or basically of their owners' cash. I know it's a fantasy, everyone wants to get up into the Premiership, but in the history of rugby, there's been one club that's really done it, in Exeter, and maybe Ealing in the future. I'm just not sure it is a good way to go forward. But the Premiership...
France have got 44 professional clubs.
That's fine, but I don't think that Pro de Deux and the Championship look in any way the same.
No. Well, the quality of Championship rugby, well, no, not in terms of fans and not in terms of funding, but I just went through in my head earlier the players that have come through the Championship, and you just close that tap at your peril, is all I'm saying. And I think there are different ways. I would definitely, at an absolute minimum, I would have more than 12 teams or 13 or 14 teams as my professional model in rugby. So let me just put a few facts your way. Participation in rugby of men is declining at an alarming rate.
It is.
Already. So, be careful. You know, be careful what you wish for if you want to go turning taps off from clubs that are 150 years of history and being part of a community. But not just that, the number of players, really good players that have come through the Championship, either who've, in the case of 200 cap this weekend for Leicester and British and Irish Lion, Tom Young's learnt to play hooker for a couple of seasons at Nottingham, two players who would Harry Williams be in the England squad right now? Would Richard Barrington have won and Petrus du Plessis have won European titles?
Would Thomas Francis Wales caps and got European titles?
Josh Bassett is a Bedford boy, is he not?
Yeah. Josh, there are so many great players.
Mark Atkinson had a year at Bedford.
Billy Twelve Trees.
Billy Twelve Trees, yeah.
Did they all play for Bedford?
Yeah.
What goes on there?
And Will Chudley and Michael LeBourgeois.
There you go. Yeah, look, I know what they contribute. My thought is, on balance, I'd rather that Championship be regionalised rather than nationalised. I think that makes a lot more sense to me. But that's a whole other very broad-ranging discussion.
Mm.
Yeah, it's not one that's easy to solve, but the likely thing is, based on all the noises that are coming out, that there will be ring fencing.
Hey, there's a new director of rugby in town.
There is.
Stephen Jones has taken up the position of director of rugby for Maidenhead Ladies, which is which is amazing, actually.
Yeah, fair play.
Yeah,
it's Stephen Jones. genuinely.
Yeah, I read this and I thought
Maidenhead women.
Sorry, what did I say?
Ladies.
Sorry, women.
Which is what it said in the article as well. And I know it's a tiny little thing. That's not me. No, that's not me being woke. I just think that's. I really dislike that Wimbledon does that when you've got these elite athletes, like amazing, top of their craft, and you go, advantage, Miss Williams.
Do you know what? I'd be so annoyed, right, if I was at the top of my craft. Imagine if I was a USC fighter and anyone called me anything other than a gentleman. I mean, I wouldn't want to be in the men's division. I'd want to be in the gentleman's division.
No, I'd be. If Wimbledon said, advantage, Mr. Djokovic. Then it's like, yeah, cool. That's fair enough.
Why would they say for Djokovic? Just Djokovic.
They just say advantage Djokovic.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. So it just feels slightly patronising.
Well, it depends who made that. It depends who came up with that rule. But I can take it or leave it. Yeah. On Stephen Jones, however, fair play to him. I think it's awesome. Actually, do you know what? I read this. I thought this is so awesome because so many people want to make a name for themselves, talking about rugby. Or, you know, doing a blog or a podcast or whatnot, and probably haven't played the game since they were 15. And it takes nothing to just go down your club, and you don't need to play, you don't need to be some sort of hard man, you just need to go down the club and volunteer your time and run the mini and juniors or phone around on a Friday to get the second team players ready, or whatever the small job that you can do for your club, you should do it. So awesome for Stephen Jones to do that, and best of luck to Maidenhead Ladies. I'll be following their progress keenly.
Fair play.
Agreed. One thing, I just want to pin something, and we don't have to have a discussion about it now, but I think it might be something which is something we talk about soon. So I just want to put it on the radar.
Uh-oh.
Just float it out there. Because since you were talking about the whole, the women's game has caused a lot of conversation, and tie that in with also concussion, and there was the transgender issue. There's been quite a few issues.
One or two.
Around rugby lately, which have had some quite meaty conversations. And fair play to World Rugby in almost all cases, they've stepped up to the plate and had a very mature conversation about all of these things. Hong Kong is going to have to be the next one.
Next what?
Conversation.
Regarding the Sevens should be there?
It's a venue for the Sevens.
It clearly shouldn't be there.
There are UK government ministers. There are democratic countries that are allies of the UK which are calling what China are up to, genocide and various other things. Now, basically, my challenge is to all the people, and it's mainly on Twitter, all the people who really kick off about all of the topics, like transgenderism, and take nuanced situations and call other people all these horrible names who don't subscribe to your one worldview. What are you going to do about this? Because they're all completely silent on these sorts of topics.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what they can do. In my mind, well, yeah, look, they're talking to each other mostly, and once you blank it out, you realise they don't have any real say, which is why they can get away with saying so much nonsense. It just can't happen there, can it? That's the long and the short of it. World Rugby cannot hold that tournament in Hong Kong. And if they do, I'll be disappointed.
And the Seven Series is sponsored by HSBC.
Well, that's a British company.
Yes, I know. I understand it, but their official, anyway, there's going to be awkward conversations ahead, is all I'm saying. And so I'm pinning that one to the board, and we'll talk about that when it rears its head. But just to get you thinking about it, because it's going to be an issue.
I mean, Dubai Sevens isn't exactly... I mean, it's not a paragon of virtue, Dubai, is it? But, people say things, don't they? Like, oh, I hope that guy never plays rugby again because, I don't know, he might have a criminal record or someone's done something awful in the past. Or we don't want that kind of... Like Israel Folau, for instance. Oh, we never want to see him in the game ever again. And I kind of get it in the professional game. And I kind of get it about, you know, locations that we go to. But I also think, like... As an amateur player, I want to play in as many weird places as I possibly can, whether that be Poland, Russia. I mean, if someone said to me, look, you can have a game in Sierra Leone, it might be a bit dicey, but, you know, we can potentially get you out there. I go, yeah, okay. And I think the same thing about, you know, people that we don't want them in that game. So what? If anything, that's where I'd like the most, actually, is to get hold of them on a rugby pitch. That's exactly what I'd like to do.
I see what you're saying. I guess all it is consistency is all I'm talking about. So if you're going to say Israel Folau should never step foot on a sporting field again, you also have to say rugby should not have the Sevens in Dubai where they throw... Where it's illegal to be gay and they throw people off the roofs of buildings.
I would say consistently don't listen to people that say stuff like that. That's where I come down. On the Dubai, I mean, the whole point of Dubai is, you know, the whole thing's, I don't know what it is. It feels so weirdly unethical. Yeah. Right. Yeah, but it does. Like, you fly out there, you know, the locals keep servants who are not far off slaves, really. Mm-hmm. You're going out for drink and debauchery. You know, there's horrible social rules around there. It's just a weird, weird place. And, you know, fine. You know, it's just one of those things. Hong Kong is completely different in my mind. That is an active place where people are fighting some awful situations, and I don't think that rugby should go there until it's resolved satisfactorily, and I don't think it will be.
Just like until they maybe clear up some of their human rights record and various things, I'm not in for a Rugby World Cup in Russia as well. Similar sort of thing.
Look, you start to stray into situations, don't you, where World Rugby is not in a position necessarily to make these kind of political judgments. It's what was the case we had recently.
But then it does. This is my point. It does, doesn't it?
Well, does it? I mean, we need to be very careful to separate out some voices of people who claim to speak for the game compared to the people who actually have the responsibility for putting on the tournaments. And they're two very different constituencies. Okay. I don't want... And also, I'm fairly relaxed with where World Rugby decided to hold their tournaments, including Russia, as it happens. I do think the Hong Kong thing is beyond. I don't know where I draw the line. I don't have criteria for it. I just feel it is beyond.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's cool. I just wanted to... I didn't want to have an in-depth. It was more just... I've noticed stuff bubbling up about this, and I think it could be something that's going to talk about, so I just wanted to flag up that is happening.
Yeah, I mean, just go back to Dubai. It just made me think, actually. Dubai is not exactly a hotbed of rugby, is it? It's not an army of Dubai children that really can't wait to be props or can't wait to pull on the Dubai shirt. You literally just go there to hold an event.
And to get hammered.
And to get hammered, yeah. That's literally it.
To get hammered? Yeah. How easy is it to get hammered?
Very. Incredibly. That's why everyone goes there.
I've never been remotely interested in going. Well, it's like rugby players always go when they've got a week off, don't they? That's where that's the default place where players go.
I've never been, but I imagine it's like getting drunk in the Trafford Centre for all week. That's kind of what I imagine.
I've been to the Middle East, but I've only been to Dubai for flight changes. And I had the fortune/misfortune of spending about 12 hours in the Emirates business class lounge in Dubai and got hammered in there on my own. And it was exactly like getting hammered at the Trafford Centre, actually.
Oh, was it?
Like, almost identical.
Maybe that's what we should, maybe that's what we should do when everything opens
like,
up.
But is it like speakeasies? Is it like, oh, you can get hammered in here, but you can't get hammered in
here? Do you think you're allowed to be drunk on the street? The answer is I don't know.
So in Dubai, I think it's certain places have licenses. The rugby ground that hosts the Sevens does have a license, and most of the places are expensive hotels. So you end up being going for brunches is the thing.
Sounds all right.
Yes, brunches are big there. They are big. I asked a friend of mine who was a commodities trader. He was out in Singapore. He did a bit of time in Dubai. And I can't remember what we were speaking about. I'm like, mate, what is the most you've ever spent on a night out? And I've got a figure in my head, which is, it's a lot. If I said it right now, people go, well, yeah, it's quite a lot. But it wouldn't blow your mind. It wouldn't be like, that's ridiculous. Because about 15 grand. It's like 15 grand on one night. Because, about 15 grand. I'm like, wow.
Oh, my God.
That's not bad.
I think I might have mentioned this before, but apparently one of the things, I can't remember whether it was United or City. I think it was United. But one of the things they used to do was whoever brought, when they went out, whoever brought the least.
I love this story.
Whoever brought the least amount of cash had to pay the bill.
That is the worst game I've ever heard of. I'm sweating just thinking about it.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's been some transfers this week.
Has there? Excuse me.
Who?
There have. I'm just dropping my phone. One that would, JB, I think you broke it as a world first. Obviously, we mentioned it slightly earlier, but Ashton to Worcester.
Well, at least he got the credit for it in the Worcester Live.
Thank you, Tim. It sounds like almost as if you're a bit jealous of my appearance in Worcester Live there.
No, not at all, JB.
Was it Worcester Guardian? What was it?
No, well,
the Worcester Global, the global Worcesterman.
It was globally important in Worcester.
Definitely.
The Worcester Defender. I don't know what it's called.
What are all the newspapers? So Exeter have the Chronicle.
Do they?
I think it's Northampton Chronicle, actually.
Northampton.
Exeter Express and Echo, actually. I remember now from when I was down there. Bath have the...
The Observer.
The Bath.
Recorder. The Record.
The Record at the Rec. Oh, nice.
The Guardian. The Bath Guardian.
Bristol Evening Post.
Yep.
I can't
think. The Bath Sentinel.
I think it's Bath Chronicle. Actually, now
I
think about
it. Yeah, it is. I think it is a bathroom. I think the Bristol... It doesn't matter. Yeah. So, yeah, there we go. Just from a little snippet of news, it turned out to be true.
Yeah, so, you moved the market, JB.
Moving the market. Just like Tim with his laptop here.
Do you know what? Within this podcast, I have bought and sold whatever PNT cryptocurrency is. And...
Good for you.
Yeah, the next round's on me.
Yeah, so...
I really, really needed rugby back.
Yeah. So, Ashton to Worcester, I think he'll thrive there. I really do. They've got more line breaks than anyone else in the league.
You see, okay, yes, I agree. He's a good player. His support line's brilliant. He still has that knack and that instinct. And I like the bloke. Every time I've chatted to him or met him, I really like the guy. So I've got nothing against it. But if there is no relegation... And with Worcester having some really good young wingers, I really like Nick David, not just in my fantasy rugby draft team where he's killing it this season, but then they've got Tom Howe and Perry Humphreys, and they've got some good young guys.
It's an interesting signing, isn't it?
Actually, maybe one guy like Chris Ashton with those young guys might be ideal.
Yeah. When he was at Sale, until the end, he was fitting in quite well, I think. And certainly the reports I was getting back about him was he is in superb shape. He was probably one of the fastest in the squad. And I didn't even think he was that fast.
Chris Ashton, he's always been rapid, and he's always referred to by other rugby players as being rapid.
Well, the reason I thought that was because when you watch him, he's always just jogging in tries because he gets himself in such good positions. So you don't necessarily think of him as fast, but maybe he's fast to get to that position in the first place, and then he trots in.
Ashton is seriously quick. Yeah. Seriously quick. Yeah. If you think back, it's 9 or 10 years, but his length of the pitch try
against Australia,
where he'd already been running for 50 or 60 metres and then burn Drew Mitchell. He is quick.
Yeah. He's an interesting character. How he settles at Worcester, I do not know. It must be weird for him because he's gone from the ultimate successful team in Saracens. Toulon are no mugs, and you expect to win things or be successful there. And then Sale were building something special, particularly when they signed him. That was the sales pitch. Harlequins might be a little bit of a step back, and now, well, not to be disrespectful to Worcester, they find themselves in a different situation again. That said, if he can apply himself, I think he will get a hatful of tries. Maybe not hat-tricks of tries, but a hatful.
He wants to get the record. I think he said he's four tries away from the Premiership try-scoring record.
I can't imagine he doesn't.
Yeah, he will get it. The player who should have got it and should have achieved an unassailable record, so should have set an unprecedented record, would have been Christian Wade, who actually still has time to do so.
What was Christian Wade on?
I don't know, but he's not far off. I'll bring it up now.
It's very unlike you, Phil, not to have this information either ingrained in your head or ready to go at the touch of a button.
Go all-time players. Stats. Tries.
Well, hold on. So, hold on. Let me and JB try and guess the top again.
I have no idea.
So we got Mark Cueto top.
Tom Vandell,
no.
Isn't it?
Tom Vandell, sorry, top. No.
Vandell. Do you know how many tries? You know how many tries he's on?
I got no idea.
72?
A bit more?
81.
It's 92 for Vandell.
92. And then Cueto's on about 86, 87.
Cueto's 90.
90.
So two below. Ashton's four below on 88.
And then Steve Hanley.
Steve Hanley is fifth. There's someone, one player above Steve Hanley.
Ben Cohen.
We've already mentioned.
Oh, Christian Wade.
Christian Wade.
Is he?
So Christian Wade, he's been out of the game for two seasons. He's still only 29 and he's on 82. So had he have played those two seasons, he would have already been the top try scorer and he would get another five seasons after that. So he could have set something like 140 or 150 tries with a fair win.
But on the flip side, he doesn't get to wear cool pads and stuff.
He doesn't. Now, Christian Wade is interesting because you're right, he could come back. Whether he does or not, I do not know. But he has had, from what I can tell, almost no wear and tear on him. He's been doing nothing but working out. Yes, he'll be a different athlete to the one that left, but he's not had all the impacts of rugby because that's not how they train for American football. So if he does come back, I imagine his longevity is going to still be pretty handy.
British and Irish Lion Christian Wade. One of my favourite things was him in his suit in the crowd for one of the Lions games with the comb in his hair.
Yeah,
he's a dude.
So looking down the list, there's a few other players who are still playing on the list of this is about the top 20. It seems unlikely that any others apart from Ashton will get the top spot. But I'll give you some notable others. Matt Banahan is on 71.
Banners? No, he's due to retire at the end of the year. So
So he's not going to score 22 or more tries by the end of the season.
Tell you what, Gloucester could do without, though, couldn't they?
They could do. There's another Gloucester player here.
May?
Sinbad?
May. Yeah, Sinbad is in there on 63. May's on 66.
Mm. I think I'm right in saying Johnny May has been the top try scorer every year he was at Leicester. And that's with missing his England games. I think I'm right in saying that. Maybe it's completely wrong.
Surely not with Christian Wade playing at the same time.
No, for Leicester. I might be top try scorer for Leicester over the last 3 years, to be fair.
Yeah, you probably only need three or four tries.
Yeah.
Other players, Danny Kerr is on there.
Really?
Mm. Oh, he's ahead of Mike Brown by a couple, isn't he? By a few.
Yeah, he's four ahead of Mike Brown. And he is the first non-outside back to appear on the list. And one below him is the top try scoring forward on the list.
Wow.
And that is?
Top try scoring forward, Neil Back.
Correct, well 59.
He used to, I remember when Leicester in the 90s just had this unbelievable pack and he just used to be on the back, he used to be on the back of every driving ball, just dotting it down.
And yeah, like kind of like Sam Simmons now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly like that.
He might also be the only forward for England to score a drop goal.
Was he?
I'm sure he scored a drop goal.
That's a good fact, that.
So I'm sure he did one against Italy. I'm sure he's picked that from a ruck.
I'm just going to preface my Sam Simmons armchair ride statement by also saying I don't think Neil Back ever scored any 50-yard tries off the back of a line-out where they went round a fullback, which Sam Simmons also has in his locker.
Correct. Do you know what the most... I just said a fact then. It's not remotely rugby-related, but I was just... I was playing a little board game and just this unbelievable fact that I found out. Queen Elizabeth II, our queen, our monarch, she... When her father died... King George the Fifth? Yeah, anyway.
I only know this because we had King George V battleships and I've been reading about them.
Ah. When her father George died, in an unusual move, they waited just over 24 hours before she was installed as the new monarch.
Uh-huh.
The reason why is amazing.
Ooh, why?
What do you think? Any thoughts?
I have no idea. Like, literally, none.
So this was 1950, something like that. Five, six, 7 years after World War II finished.
This is why you tuned into the podcast for stuff like this, obviously. It is not rugby related. I'll just make that clear. It wasn't that she was...
she's not doing an S&C.
She had a Bronco to do.
Yeah, yeah. And they couldn't contact her. No? So wasn't that...
I think was it something that was happening in the world at the time?
Was she on a plane?
No.
Or a boat?
No, incorrect. No,
yacht?
No, no. The reason was that they had to check to make sure the Queen Mother wasn't pregnant, because there was thought she might have been pregnant. And had she been pregnant when George died, had it been a boy, that he would have been king.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Even though the king wasn't born?
Yes.
Who writes these rules? Laws.
But the king had been conceived at that point.
Had the king been had a male baby been conceived by that point, then it would have been the heir to the throne.
Christ. Wow. Do you know what? There's not enough money in the world that would make me want to be royal. Maybe there is. Maybe there is. There probably isn't.
You not fancy partying with Prince Andrew in New York?
Good question. We'll discuss that later.
Anyway, I just thought I learnt that this weekend. I thought it was a really cool fact.
That is a cool fact. You're not wrong.
And the way that they did pregnancy tests in those days it involved like injecting frogs with urine. I'm not making any of this up, by the way.
Okay. Are you being on these Discord servers with your funny crypto friends?
Look it up. I'm not making it up.
So we got to frogs being injected with urine from starting to discuss some of this week's rugby transfers.
Oh, yes. So,
having done Ashton, let me talk about a couple of others. So there's the two Tigers ones. Which
I'll talk about other animals that got injected with urine in a minute when Phil's done with this. Go on, Phil.
Perfect. So Lavanini going at the end of the season from Tigers.
Good.
Taufua going immediately, albeit there seems to be some confusion over whether he's actually going, because Leon have announced him and Steve Borthwick seems to think it's not gone through yet.
So they're waiting for a South African to sign in his place. And that sounds like a joke, given Leicester's back row, but it's actually not a joke. I think that's what's happening.
Yeah, Taufua's going to Leon. I thought you mentioned the other one as well, Marcus Smith to Leon. Marcus Smith to Leon. And I think that's a great move for him, because go get paid. And
what? Is this?
Is this a rumour? Are you trying to move the market again, JB?
I've heard Marcus Smith to Leon. That's
and this is the same person that said several weeks ago, Chris Ashton to Worcester.
Yeah.
Marcus Smith to Leon.
That's what I've heard, Marcus Smith to Leon. And I think that's a good move, because he's not going to get... Well, look how fly halves are treated in and around the England squad, which is you're not getting in because this is Ford and Farrell's show. So they're going to be the fly half duo all the way to the World Cup. Marcus Smith, the way he played today was sublime. He is clearly the future, and the sooner they hand over some England game time to him, the better. But in the meantime, in the same way that I say about Yeoan Lloyd, go, test the system, go make as much money as you can.
Well, he's making coin. He was the most expensive teenager in the UK in rugby, wasn't he?
Not enough. Nowhere near enough for as good as he is. Go to
he
France.
Would be. He could get a £1 million contract in France, I would suggest, or not far off that level.
Go to France, Marcus, and then
go for three. I think that's a sensible option. I think it'd be a good option. Go three season, experience something different, make a load of money, and then come back an even better player than you were.
One of the world's great culinary cities. They are spending money hand over fist. They're getting gradually better each year in Europe. Look, he's not going to win a Heineken Cup at Harlequins. Eddie's not going to change his mind about Ford and Farrell. That, you know, the die's been cast there. Go and play in France. And I think that rumour has got something to it.
Any more transfer rumours? Because otherwise we might as well just slide straight into Quinn's.
Well, I just want to comment on Lavanini. I think that's a good person to get rid of.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, expensive individual, not done anything at all.
And they've
really
got more than their quota of Argentinians now.
Yes.
Two other bits. Well, one rumour, one actual factual bit of news. Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, who is a... New Zealand born, New Zealand playing rugby league fullback who plays, I think he's Melbourne Storm.
Yes, I've heard this. Don't know who he is though.
I don't really watch much NRL. I've watched a few highlights of him. Amazing feet, amazing pace, amazing strength. Really talented. It feels a bit like, so he is rumoured to be signing for a New Zealand-based Super Rugby franchise to have a shot at the 2023 World Cup, which feels a bit like drummer Benji Marshall.
Yes, I was about to say it feels like Benji Marshall.
This is going back 6-7 years when Benji Marshall signed for the Blues, I want to say.
Yep.
Incredibly talented. Amazing feet, amazing hands, great distribution skills. The whole package, and never really did anything new because it's so hard to adapt in a couple of years. Also see Sam Burgess. Yeah, it feels a little bit speculative from both sides. But one that is not speculative, well, it is speculative for the performance, but has actually been confirmed, is Leone Nakarawa to my beloved Ulster.
Big.
I knew this is going somewhere.
Big.
Talk about over the hill, not performing expensive players. You've really got the king of the castle there, mate. You must be delighted.
What are they going to do, play him number eight, do you reckon? If everyone was fit?
It's a great question. Probably, yeah, I think they would, because losing Kurt Seah is huge. Leona Nakarawa is an unbelievable talent. Like the only second row I can legitimately think of, certainly still playing, ignoring Radiki Sumo, who could win a gold medal in sevens, who could play at that level in sevens. Huge, huge individual, 18 stone, 6 foot six, enormous hands, sublime offloading skills, incredible strength. However, he's 33 and he got sacked from Racing Metro for, I've not got it in front of me at the moment, the phrase that they used, but he was, he didn't come back from after Fiji national duty, and also was not performing, was overweight, was unavailable. And so it just feels a little bit of a gamble. If you can get the best out of him, he could have another 2, 3, 4 years of being one of the best players in the world.
He's a big fan of large northern UK industrial metropolitan cities.
Yes.
And exactly. He's also a big fan of God, which would help with him going to Ulster.
Yeah, Ulster's main attraction actually is its relationship with God, I would guess. There's no lack of God-based attractions, should you be that way inclined.
100%.
Ruin Pienaar, so loved it.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's a perfect fit.
Yeah, but, could well be.
So he's not like for like with Curtsy, I'd say that though.
Yeah, so I assumed he went there because he quite liked watching the ships being built in Glasgow and now would like to go and watch the activities of Bombardier in Belfast. But, you know, maybe it's God. I don't know.
So, yeah, Titanic Museum, that is where you'll find Leone day one if you're in Belfast and want to see your new recruit.
Yeah, nice.
Love
nice.
It. Proud,
so,
proud.
You're happy with that, are you, Phil?
So I'm excited to see him play. Yeah. I'm excited to see him play. I probably would have gone for someone who's more like for like, albeit there are very few players who are like for like with Kurt Seah.
Yeah, there's loads at Tigers.
At least you've got someone who, like Marcel Kurt Seah, is just one of the best at what he does. You have got someone who's one of the best at what he does, and I think Dan McFarlane's the kind of coach that could build a team tactically around that strength.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. So, yeah, excited
good.
To see him play.
That is good. I don't know whether JB was just trying to move the market on Marcus Smith or not, or whether there was any genuine substance there. We'll find out. But, I mean, firstly, I don't know why... If you didn't have the commentary on and you were just watching the game at a glimpse, you just assume, oh, right, Wasps are playing in some disgusting white kit today.
Yeah.
What's going on there? And Quins are in black. Because it was a complete reversal the way those two teams play.
Do you know,
everything we've been saying about Wasps, you would say about Quins today, and 100%. Vice versa.
Yes.
They were the mirror image of each other, except for one was substantially better than the other one. And the parallels are scary, aren't they? You know, Wasps got rid of a director of rugby who... you know, wasn't working there for whatever reason. Good bloke, wasn't working. Harlequins did the same thing. So Wasps have a veteran nine who works with a young ten, creates magic. They have a seven who is an absolute pest around the breakdown. They're aggressive in defence. They're quick in attack. all the things which Harlequins were today, exactly like Wasps, but better.
Yeah. On this performance, miles better as well. And Wasps, Harlequins forced so many mistakes from Wasps, both at the breakdown, which is normally what Wasps are doing. Will Evans was brilliant, but also in their defense, when Wasps had set piece ball and they were trying to get their back line firing, Quins were right in their face, disrupting it. And their box kicking game and their press from the kicking game, they were really putting Wasps under pressure, which is exactly what Wasps normally do to other teams.
Wasps are remarkable in that the way they get attention off their players is by putting pressure on you. If you're having to defend Wasps and all the good things that they do, you sort of forget that maybe they might be inadequate in some other ways. What Harlequins managed to do is have enough ball and deprive them of enough ball that they can start to pick at those holes. And I think Austin Healy mentioned it numerous times today. Sopoanga did not look comfortable at fullback. The back three in general did not look comfortable for most of the game. And you can afford to do that if you are and we'll talk about the other bit in a second. But if you have enough ball and enough good playmakers around you, Danny Kerr and Marcus Smith should really have the advantage over a lot of other halfback pairings just based on their talents and their experience. And they did today, and it really showed.
And I like, from a Quinn's perspective, having Andre Esterhazen in there because, yeah. I mean, he's enormous, he's direct, he's got a good skill set, but if things aren't quite going well or they need another option, he's a brilliant other option to get you some go forward. He was quality. And Aaron Morris did the same thing. Aaron Morris is a big, strong boy coming off the wing. Yep. They used him intelligently a few times, which then led to more space for Lewis Liner, who was superb.
Yeah, he was really good. Very, very quick off the mark. The thing which I also thought really struggled, made Wasps struggle, the pressure they managed to assert on Umaga. Now, he has been pretty much untouched his entire career, and I worry that the blueprint is now there to upset him, which is get on him early doors. And he looked hesitant to me.
Well, I think it's the same. Marcus Smith looked so good for the reason that Umaga looked so dodgy today, is that up front, Quinn's just mullered Wasps, absolutely mullered him.
Yeah, the defence in particular.
I think that's right, because the service that Danny Kerr was giving, the service that Danny Kerr and his pack were giving to Marcus Smith was superb. The service that Will Porter and his pack, and I'm not blaming Will Porter, it was a team effort, but the service that Umaga was getting was not good. No, second rate for much of that game. And you saw it, the back line, there's a lot of talent in that Wasp back line, even though it's not their first choice right across the board. And they were just stop-start, passes behind each other, failing to time their runs because the quality of the ball was so poor.
And if you think about it now, in Dean Ryan's one of the people that's been mentioned for the vacant role at Quinn's, by Dean Ryan logic, Quinn's hammered Wasps. Wasps hammered Bath. So if Quinn's played Bath next weekend, Quinn's would win 100-0.
Yeah, that is true, actually. Crikey. I'm trying to think of anything else about Wasps. Yeah, just on Will Porter. I did feel sorry for him because his forwards were not doing particularly well. I thought Wollstonecraft had a good game, though, when he came on. I thought he made a material difference to how Wasps started to play. But clutching at straws there, really.
Yeah, very much so. I completely forgot I meant to say in relation to Bristol, because it just reminded me with Paolo Adogru, but we were talking about players like Redpath and Adogru last week having potential little kind of metaphorical tug of wars between different nations wanting them. Piers O'Connor is like Ireland and England. One of them needs to strike soon, otherwise they're going to lose him.
Are they doing effectively a Dutch auction for Piers O'Connor?
Quite possibly, yeah.
Show the least interest possible.
Yeah.
He is magnificent. I love watching him play.
And we mentioned the Championship rugby earlier, Ealing Trailfinders, Piers O'Connor.
Right. Just hold, everyone hold their thoughts, right? I don't know how big Piers O'Connor is. He doesn't strike me as a massive man.
About 6 foot, I'd guess. Phil will have the information up like that. I'd guess 6 foot 1 and 15 stone. So about 96 kg would be my guess.
Yeah, okay. So 96 kg?
I think he's quite a big. I think he's quite a unit.
I'd say 89 kg. Okay. 96? He's not heavy.
I reckon he might be 95 kg.
So I've got two weights from two totally different profiles.
I'm going to say 86 kilograms.
So I've got two heights and two weights that are both different from two separate sources. So I'm going to go to his Bristol Bears profile.
Okay.
My guess was, what did I say? 6 foot 1, 96 kg. Yeah. And you're saying?
I'm going to say 5'11 and he's 87.
Which is about 14 stone.
Yeah.
So I would have gone for about Tim, what Tim was saying, 6'1 and 95, 96 kg. He's listed as, so Bristol Bears own, which is the most accurate it's going to be. So he is 6'1 and 102 kg.
Wow, he's much bigger than I thought.
He's nearly 16 stone.
He's a big, strong boy.
Right, well, I take it all back then. So anyway, here is my point. What is your obsession with Cam Redpath, who is, by the way, a good player? But does Cam Redpath and Piers O'Connor not remind you of the same kind of player, except for one's got a really famous dad and has been, lauded since a young age, and the other one's come from Ealing? They do. They play across the back line. They have great skills. Piers O'Connor's probably a better runner.
I think he's... if I was going to draw a comparison with another player, I would say... Actually, no, because he doesn't kick. I was going to say Henry Slade, except minus the kicking... Henry Slade, because fullback, wing, centre, inside, outside, he cuts great lines, intelligent player.
Bigger, but stronger than Henry Slade, more better running direct than Henry Slade.
I can't believe my eyeballs are so bad. I always think that I can really eyeball a player. And, God, I'm underestimated by two stone and 2 inches.
Well, he stood next to Semi Randrandra's beard.
Yeah.
Which is huge and luscious.
We've not actually spoke about Semi Randrandra going round the fullback yet.
We're just ghosting the fullback.
Still think he's overrated, but it doesn't matter.
Absolutely, not overrated.
That no one in Bath bothered for that try because they all knew there's no point in bothering because he's going to do this whether I like it or not.
Yeah. What are my options? Tackle him and get bummed off. Okay, well, that could cost me a week's worth of injury and maybe something serious, more serious. Or do I just let him in? He's going to score either way.
Oh, just...
Oh, hang on, Tim making a trade.
No, I'm not. I'm just looking at...
Is it Discord server?
I just went to Piers... I just went to Piers O'Connor's Twitter account and the banner picture he has, I just looked at his legs are massive.
Oh, I really misjudge this guy.
He's got a big trunk.
Yeah, he does.
Big wide base. Just to compare him, JB, you compared him to Cameron Redpath, Piers O'Connor. To me, Cam Redpath is still a boy, but Piers O'Connor is a man, and that's the difference in their strength of their running.
Yeah, actually, I think Cam Redpath's very, very strong, but they strong. Mind you, Cam might even be bigger now, actually. He might be 6'3". Two or three, I don't know.
Yeah, he's listed as 6'2" and 95 kg. Oh, so a stone lighter, but an inch taller.
Oh, there you are. Well, that's who I'd compare it to. Any other games? There was one. Leicester played. Oh, Sale played. Sale played and won.
Yeah, good win for Sale.
Very good win for Sale. Off the mark in the Sanderson era.
Yeah, and it happened 2 weeks ago, but officially, Dimes is no more. Dimes has been terminated as a director of Manchester Sale Rugby Club Limited.
Oh, is that right? I have no idea.
I'd love to know what the financial settlement was.
I
substantial.
So substantial, we'll never find out about it. Yeah. Some things are that expensive, I would imagine.
Yes. I suspect that is exactly right, that we'll never know the truth.
Yeah. Just grab an NDA, a quick NDA off the shelf. Off we go.
Steve Diamond NDA.
Where did Dimes keep the NDAs? I don't know. He had the file. I literally do not know anything about that.
There is a vault somewhere with lots of NDAs and other things in them. Very valuable bits of evidence. Probably as you just used as leverage.
Mike Brewer's in there, apparently.
Sale won against Leicester Tigers, kind of one and a half, second team, 2A team, whatever you want to call
good.
It.
Good
win, though. Some nice tries for Sale.
Yeah, great to see Beaumont back. Great to see the horse back, McGuigan. Didn't score, but I think he's exactly what they've been missing. As much as I like Hammersley and I like Luke James, I think having both of them at wing and fullback in your back three is just not enough. It's just not enough threat there. You can have one or the other, but you can't have both. So Byron is a welcome addition back. I do like the fact that they are constantly picking Doug Dale now. He's going to be very good. Ashman was in the team. He eventually will be very good. And Bevan Rod. And I just hope that we see more guys coming through the academy, because that academy is so well stocked and has so much talent. So that's all really I've got to say about that game. The result is broadly in line with what I expected. And I made an appearance on BBC Radio Leicester as a neutral talking about Sale this week.
Were you badged as a neutral?
I was badged as a neutral. JB from Egg Chasers is on now. He's a neutral, but is near Sale. And that's how I was introduced.
Perfect.
So thank you, BBC Radio Leicester.
Mm.
Do you want to do some predictions for next week?
Yeah.
There's two other games we've not mentioned.
Go on. What were they?
Exeter beat Worcester. In a very, very close game.
Yeah, Worcester disappointed about not winning. Sort of says where they're at. Exeter needed the win. And,
yes.
And have chalked up the 4 points after a couple of defeats.
Yeah, Exeter put a strong team out. And I was expecting this to be a bigger win to Exeter. So fair play Worcester to keep it within, 4 points. And Worcester to get a losing bonus point. The other game was one of my favourite games of the weekend.
Agreed.
Gloucester Northampton.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was a tough one. I actually watched the whole thing. I can't believe I forgot it. And I did. And I think I forgot it because I was quite invested in Gloucester winning. I really wanted them to win. There are teams out there who are losing. And they are losing in a despicable manner. See Bath for details. See Harlequins last week. The way that we spoke about them throughout the season until this week when they won. Gloucester, I don't see that. They tried so bloody hard. And they're just one of those teams that are in a losing streak. And once it becomes a habit, it's a real hard habit to break. They went ahead and they just folded.
Compare and contrast, and I'm not saying it's not without merit, but just compare and contrast the way you're talking about Stuart Hooper, Paul Gustard, and George Skivington.
I've not heard George Skivington speak, so I don't know is the answer.
No. I don't mean in terms of how they're speaking. I mean, Gloucester are bottom of the league.
Yeah, but George Skivington is the line-out coach for London Irish, right? He's not the self...
Forwards coach.
Well, I thought he was line-out coach.
He was forwards coach.
Okay.
And he's director of rugby at Gloucester now.
Yeah, well, whichever way it was, he's come up and he's going to need a chance to prove himself. Gustard was one of the most expensive DORs in the Premiership who came with European...
How do you know that?
I know things.
And so? It's outside the salary cap. What difference does it make?
Well, it does make a difference. Do you not think it makes a difference if you pay a guy a lot of money? I mean, you expect results, don't you?
Well,
it's irrelevant to the salary cap.
I never said anything about the salary cap.
But it is relevant to performance in my mind.
Yes, it is. And my thought is, Gustard, one of the reasons he went, right, if he was cheap, he probably would have stayed. when you're paying a man that much money, you need to see results. You basically make more pressure for yourself. He came with a great record. That is a different scenario. Gloucester have taken a bit of a risk with Skivington. And I think more clubs should do this. Look around, see who's doing well in the forwards role or in the championship and give these guys a go. So I will be a lot less critical of a guy like Skivington. And also, the other thing I like about him, he's come from a different club. So he's earned that position to go elsewhere. Whereas a lot of guys just go through, ex-player, then becomes a coach, then becomes DOR. I'm not that keen on that. I'd prefer to see Stuart Hooper cut his teeth elsewhere.
I don't disagree. And actually, I quite like the atmosphere at Gloucester when I was there and the clarity of George Skivington and Alex Brown along with I can't remember the third person that's part of that little leadership group. Or maybe it might be even the chief exec, whatever. I actually quite like it.
Who is Alex King?
No, but whatever you just described is exactly what Quins did with Paul Gustard. They looked around.
They've got the England defence coach.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty prime coach. Yeah, it's not like...
All I'm pointing out is that you sort of...
Sanderson from...
You completely change your narrative...
No.
You change the narrative to suit your opinion rather
did
than...
Did you ever see the Skivington signing on the cards?
I certainly didn't.
Right.
No?
Yeah, everyone was clamouring, Gustard is going to have a DOR role at some point. They're very different propositions, I would say.
But I agree they're different propositions. I think Gloucester are in some trouble.
I think they're going to be all right.
They are going to be all right because it's going to get ring-fenced. But if ring-fencing wasn't looming large,
yes,
I think they'd be in real trouble. They've got one option at 10 who got injured halfway through this game.
Yep.
Billy 12 Trees is their next 10 off the rank. They've got some incredible talent in certain positions where they've got huge depth in their back three, but not huge depth in their second row. For reasons we've been over before, you have two world-class second rows leave you, then you're going to struggle when Mostart and Grobler left.
But the coaching team decided not to replace those and to sign loads of wingers.
One is a problem.
Not of your making, but it's been compounded by decisions of their own making.
Yeah, I think Alamano is going to be a good signing, though. I think he's going to take.
He looks good.
Yeah,
he works hard. He hits hard. He carries well.
Yeah, they're not. I don't think they're a million miles away. The problem with the Premiership is. A million miles away or in a losing habit or whatnot, it can get you into a lot of trouble because everyone is so competitive.
We're still only 7 games in.
Yeah, but have you won one game, Gloucester? Yeah. And there's a bunch of teams on 2 games.
Yeah, some of which were COVID wins.
Were they?
Which they may have won anyway, but Worcester had a COVID win and so did Bath, I think.
Yeah.
Bath have only got 2 wins as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not.
Or was it Leicester that had the COVID win? I can't remember. Whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it definitely wasn't Northampton. Or maybe it was Northampton.
Yeah, they did have one.
Yeah, Northampton played the game that they wanted to play, which is great. They were able to keep the ball in the hand because you weren't able to kick it. They looked good. They slung it around a bit. I'd like Northampton a lot as a club too.
I remember saying this when they beat Worcester just on Boxing Day that they actually had a little bit of swagger and they played with a bit of attacking intent and didn't always come off, but it happened. And exactly what you just said is right. The wind meant they had to start playing, and that's when they look good. But that's allied with the fact they had guys like Lewis Ludlam and Sean Adendorf actually punching holes.
He showed up. Sean Adendorf showed up big time.
He played well.
Yeah, there is a really enjoyable game. Gloucester. They should have done better. They really should have. At least a losing bonus point.
This is at home to a struggling Northampton Saints.
Yeah. Who actually are... I mean, does that not show you the quality of the Premiership? Look at the team that Saints put out. Look how infrequently that they win. And you think, yeah, okay, they've got a world-class coach. They've got a very nice squad. And they're not really challenging. These are the teams that you have to beat. And they're very, very good. Which is why the Premiership is such a good league.
I think that Gloucester team... is a reasonable distance off that Northampton team as well. As in, you look at the players, I think the Northampton team are man for man, except maybe one or two positions better.
And that's
the problem that Gloucester have.
Gloucester win hands down at 12. Do you know what? I really like Gloucester's 12-13 combo when Harris plays. I think they've got lovely balance there. And I like the back three. But then
Gloucester's back three can compete with anyone in the league.
Any one of Gloucester's back threes can compete with any team in the league.
And then there's the rest of it, isn't there? Lewis Ludlow is very, very good. They should have enough. I hope they've got enough.
Well, they won't need enough, but I don't think they'll finish bottom. But I was just trying to spread the if we're going to talk about DORs under pressure, then
do you think Skivington's under pressure?
I just think you need to spread. I don't think he is. No,
do you
because
think he should be.
No, I'm just saying that if you're going to start, if you're going to throw shade at DORs for the performances of their teams, Gloucester are bottom of the table. I'm just pointing out facts.
But do you think he deserves as much criticism as Hooper?
No. But it's only 7 games into the season.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I think when I look at the Gloucester performance, I see a not as talented team really working hard. And when I look at the Bath performance, I see a really, really talented team. Maybe one of the best squads, maybe the best squad in the Premiership. Well, you know, and they have their worst ever defeat against Bristol.
Yeah, I would just, again, I'm purely playing devil's advocate here. At Bath, you wonder how much influence the DOR has in the squad that's there.
Yep.
And two, the squad that, this is George Skivington's squad.
Is it George Skivington's squad? How many players? This is a genuine question. I don't know how many players he signed.
He had money. He had players to sign, and he's been there since.
I don't know how long has he been there for. Did Ackerman move?
Came in, whatever.
Over the summer. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's a Skivington.
No, it's
squad
not. Not a Skivington squad. But yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I do think. He's clearly performing poorly. I don't. To your point earlier, Tim, I don't think he should be under pressure because I think he should be given time. There was reasons why they appointed him. He should be given a significant period of time to
agreed
to do everything he needs to. But it is also right to point out that they are bottom. This was a poor performance overall. They had some good moments, but they got handily beaten by a struggling Northampton Saints side.
Yeah, and to be clear, as I say, when I went to Gloucester, I was there for the Ulster game, and I really, really like what the freshness in the atmosphere and what George Skivington is saying and the team and how they're all aligned and the processes are going through. I think they're going to have good times ahead.
Would you say it's a dynamic environment?
It's certainly very dynamic.
Yeah, it's important that. Right, games next week.
Okay. One other thing. JB, did you watch your beloved Benetton to bring your Premier Sports bill down?
I did not. Damn it. This week's cost me more money.
I spent my Premier Sports subscription on crypto.
Did you? Wise.
Well, it's worth noting because JJ Hanrahan got some stick last week.
Yes, he scored a drop goal.
Yes, he got stick last week for missing one hard kick and one easy kick. He slotted 83rd minute drop goal to win. So a depleted Benetton by 2 points thanks to that drop goal after the hooter had gone.
So I did consider watching some Pro 14 because I really enjoyed it in the weeks that there was no Premiership. And I thought, do you know what? I've been too harsh here. And then I logged on to my rugby app. I don't know what it's called, but the app which I get all my information from. And I looked at the squads which they were putting out, Scarlets versus Leinster. And then I immediately logged back out and thought, I'm not watching that. Forget it.
Yeah.
Not doing it.
So I didn't see any of it. I know that the younger and possibly better Burn brother was playing 10 for Leinster.
Yeah.
And the younger but not better Carney brother, Dave Carney, was also playing for Leinster.
The thing which intrigued me is the young second row they've got there is Bird, I think.
Baird.
I like him. And I nearly watched it just to watch him. I thought, now what am I doing?
He is good. I mean, they still had some class. So Ty Furlong, who's been out for a long time, came and played 40-odd minutes. And Dan Levy, obviously, has also been out for a long time. And Jack Conan were both playing. So there is still some quality there. And this was a very handy win for Leinster.
Yeah, they pumped him.
Premier Rugby, hear me now, believe me later. I'm not cruel about the Pro 12 because I hate the people involved or because, you know, they've not got any good players. I hate it because there were hardly any players playing because they know that there is no risk of them getting relegated and there are no consequences. If this is the road that Premier Rugby want to go down, they're going to get exactly the same reaction that we give to the Pro 14 every week when we see these depleted teams. I don't know what they are thinking.
Well, on to what will be a very keenly contested game on Friday night at Ashton Gate, Bristol versus Sale Sharks. Tasty game. How do you see this one panning out?
No idea. So, Bristol at home?
Yep.
Yep.
I'm going to pick Bristol. I'm going to pick Bristol because things take time. And moving from... I mean, Samson's had 3 weeks now. It'll be 4 weeks by the time they see him. Still going to take time. I think a settled Steve Diamond team would have been very competitive. And I don't know. I don't think... Well, Bristol beat Sale last time they're at the... last time they're at Ashton Gate. And it's actually quite a comprehensive win from what I remember. And Bristol have got... Bristol have gone up a gear. So Bristol by 10 points.
It is interesting that on both you discussing Bristol's performance this week and Bristol's performance next week, you have in both instances focused on the negatives from the other team rather than the positives from Bristol.
Have I?
Something interesting going on. Is this because Bristol got into the playoffs and Sale didn't? Still bitterness there?
No, not at all. I just like to weigh up the pros and cons of both. No, I don't think...
You like to weigh up the cons and cons of one.
No, I did say Bristol got up a gear, to be fair. And they have. Look, I'm not... There's something nagging to me about Bristol.
I think it's based on what it is you dislike about...
Things like friend of the pod who keeps on texting me about them. I want to see him play.
based on how you talk about Gustard and Hooper, I think it might be that Pat Lamb, whilst he does it in a much more enigmatic and engaging way, he does also speak in cliches quite a lot. I reckon it might be that.
Yeah, he does. But could you ever imagine Gustard or Hooper giving their worthless speech or whipping out his laptop saying, "This is wrong. Look at this corrupt referee." Or, you know, he speaks in cliches, but he's sincerely cliched.
He's authentic.
Yeah, it's almost like he's written the management training book.
Yes,
rather
exactly.
rather than he's reading quotes from it.
Yeah, he's not like the substitute teacher like the other two are.
Yeah.
He's the actual teacher.
Yeah.
Here's what nags me about Bristol is I think that they have an underbelly and they can be exposed. So when they score a million odd points, I think, yeah, okay, you've scored a million odd points and Semi's run around a bad team that don't really care. But what happens when it really gets tough? And that's a thing. So, yeah, they've got so much firepower that they can afford to do that. But I still think there's something there which is not solidified yet.
Well, it's getting there, though. They won that game against Toulon in the Challenge Cup final. They beat Exeter at Sandy Park since.
They did. Both those things happened. Yeah. But then look what happened to them against Wasps. In playoff rugby, and they got absolutely battered. So there is just a little nagging doubt about them.
Well, so I'm going to predict a Bristol win, albeit I don't think it will be that straightforward because I expect Sale to be pretty combative, pretty physical, and so give me Bristol by 6 points.
I agree with that. Bristol clean sweep on this one. It's a Saturday, and there's a kickoff, an early kickoff. The rugby doesn't start at 2:15 for Italy, France. It begins at 1 p.m. for Wasps v Northampton.
Yes. Mm. I no longer know anything about rugby. I have no idea how this is going to pan out. Wasps, do they bounce back? Have Harlequins inadvertently showed us the blueprint to beat Wasps?
Harlequins. There was a lot of emotion came out in that game. And you heard Marcus Smith talking after the game about the leadership shown by some of the senior players who stepped up and brought everyone together. And there's obviously an outpouring of emotion after Gustard left. So I'm not sure how much of that is strategy and how much it is just purely being fired up and being that extra 10% more fired up. And so hitting the rucks harder, competing harder at the breakdown, getting the defensive line more accurate. I'm not sure there's the blueprint there other than the emotion. That said, I'm not sure how easily Wasps correct some of their mistakes.
I think this will be a good game. I think it'd be an open game. This is the kind of game that could be a Wasps 38, Saints 35 type fixture.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm going for a Wasps narrow. Wasps win by 8 points.
But high scoring. Wasps win by, a score, but it's going to be a 60-plus point game.
Yeah, something like that. Wasps to win. Something like that.
Bath Quins, we've already said it. Quins are going to win by 100 because Quins panned Wasps and Wasps panned Bath.
Yeah, minimum 100 points to Harlequins. Yeah. Minimum.
But if there was ever a Quinsy thing to do, it would be to follow up a very good performance against a good team by a terrible performance against a bad team. So this could go either way.
I'm going to go Bath win at home narrowly.
I think Quins will narrowly win. I think there is something fundamentally wrong at Bath that's not going to be fixed in the week unless Hoops steps down or steps aside or steps up or wherever he's going.
Mm. What is going on there? Yeah. Jay, Bath, Quins, what do you think?
100 points to Quins.
Okay, cool.
put that on the board.
Leicester v Worcester.
Give me Worcester.
Ooh, interesting.
At where?
At Welford Road.
I do think Leicester.
I think Leicester narrow.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised to see Worcester win.
Do you know, their best signing, and probably their best signing for a couple of years now, is Richard Wigglesworth. You know, there's a lot to be said about having a really, really... By the way, Richard Wigglesworth, everyone's talking about Tom Brady because he's going for, ooh, watch out, a sixth ring. Big deal. Wigglesworth has got 5 titles and is 36.
And 3 European titles.
Yeah, but...
Two European titles.
Yeah,
no,
but Brady can only win one thing a year, you see, so I don't count
any. Oh, yeah, that's fair.
You see what I mean? Like, Brady's not got any European titles to his name. Yeah, so maybe we should start treating Richard Wigglesworth with the respect and the pay packet that we treat Tom Brady with. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, there's lots to be said for Big Back Row and Richard Wigglesworth. That's why I think they'll have the edge.
Irish v Gloucester is interesting. And I'm going to go for Gloucester. For Irish, because this is the first time Irish have played Gloucester since Skivington left them.
Beef.
Ooh,
But you know, does Skiv know all the calls and whatnot? And like, who's good and who's not?
They're using the Australia 2014 lineup callbook.
That is true.
That was part of the contractual agreement for Rob Simmons, Adam Coleman moving over, and Sakopi Kepu.
Yeah.
There is probably some warring factions there. Obviously, Sean Brown
there will be. There will be. So you talk about emotion. There will be some emotion from the Irish players there. They will have felt slighted.
Will they? Because, I mean, they're all mercenaries. I mean, do they care?
Well, no, don't you remember? There was... I don't know whether that ever went anywhere, actually, but...
Do you think it...
London Irish said it was predatory on Gloucester and they were going to threaten to take them to court.
Absolutely, but the CEO's not playing. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if all those lads have got the London Irish WhatsApp group on mute. So, I don't know. Let's do our thing. Let's be cheerleaders for the Prem and say, yeah, it's going to be spicy because of this, because of the backlash. I'm not sure it will be. I hope Gloucester win, but actually, I think Irish will win.
Yeah, give me Irish. Irish by 5 points.
There we go. And we'll get into the Six Nations. Oh, this has been an
one more game. Pod.
What? Oh yeah, Sunday, of course. Before the Wales-Ireland game, you can watch Newcastle Falcons entertain the champions, Exeter Chiefs.
Always on TV, Tim?
Yeah.
Are there any in particular that fans of Chasers should watch?
No. Yeah,
right.
No, this Six Nations period is a very chilled out time of year for me.
Ridiculous.
Because there's less games, there's less televised games, so...
Why don't they take it serious and send their real talent out?
Well, it's because there's so many eyeballs on the Six Nations. They recognise they just need to keep the real talent, you know, fresh.
Keep the powder dry for Europe.
Box fresh for the times when more people are watching.
Exactly right. What's the last one? Newcastle Falcons against
Chiefs.
Newcastle. You've done really well so far. Yeah, not beating Chiefs. Not in a million years.
I'll go Chiefs.
Chiefs. But I think this will be close. I think Newcastle to get a losing bonus point, but no try bonus point. So it's something like Falcons 18, Chiefs 23.
There we go. Right, we got this has been an absolute bloody marathon podcast. I can't believe how long it's been.
Not too bad. Not too bad. But average. But average for us.
Well, that's fine though. Nothing wrong with that. But we've got another shorter Six Nations podcast, which we'll. Do you know what? Let's do that tomorrow, boys. We'll release that in the feed tomorrow. So you get subscribed. We'll have our Six Nations preview pod coming your way very soon. Thank you very much to everyone. Humbled by the response of people supporting the podcast on Patreon, and we will be drawing that as we get into February. We'll be doing our shirt giveaway. So
next week, is it not?
Patreon.com/eggchasers. Thank you very much for that. He's at Jay Beardmore. I'm at Cocker. We're at Rugby Podcast. Phil's lurking in your DMs. Let the boys play.
The boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.